Hello, my name is Douglas B. Reynolds, Ph.D., and Professor of Petroleum and Energy Economics at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This podcast is called Energy and Healthcare Parallels, Maximizing Electric Utility Social Welfare. Page 1, Introduction. I'm a professor of Petroleum and Energy Economics. I have written and published numerous academic articles and books on energy and have an academic Google Hirsch index of 16 and a Google Euclidean index of 275. I was a mechanical engineer working on energy mechanical interactions and alternative energy systems when I first became an engineer over 30 years ago. As a petroleum and energy economist, I have been observing Alaska's oil industry for over 20 years, and when I worked in Kazakhstan, I observed the former Soviet Union and its oil industry as it went through its transitioning. I revisited Kazakhstan in 2017 and attended its World Energy Exposition, Energy Expo 2017, called Future Energy: Solutions for Tackling Humankind's Greatest Challenge. The expo is still there in Nur-Sultan, Kazakhstan's capital city. As a professor of petroleum and energy economics in Alaska, I have over 20 years of experience observing Alaska's petroleum industry. I have done gas pipeline economic modeling, talked to pipeline engineers and investors about such models, and have analyzed Alaska's petroleum fiscal system. I have also worked closely with engineers working on Alaska's local electric utility and the University of Alaska Fairbanks' own combined cycle coal-fired electric power generator. That generator provides two essential services to UAF: electric power and heat. That means each carbon atom of coal-fired electric power also provides essential heating energy for the campus and thus essentially reduces the carbon footprint of UAF. This also brings up the question of how best to regulate and run such electric utilities, which are natural monopolies and yet are being pushed into being free market entities. The question arises, how can we make electric power markets more efficient? Do we need more government intervention, more technology, or should we use consumer sovereignty to maximize social welfare in energy markets with competitive electric generation? Most economists believe it is the latter, that is, use consumer sovereignty to create cleaner, cheaper, and more efficient electric power. And considering that most electric power utilities are trying to empower consumer sovereignty to create efficient, socially maximizing power markets, then it behooves us to look at other parallel markets with a similar goal, such as the healthcare market, in order to see how successful such markets work. Two main questions need to be looked at. First, what systems of healthcare markets are out there, and what systems of electric power markets are out there? And second, what is the role of governments in these systems, and what is the role of consumer sovereignty? To probe and ponder these questions, I propose to proceed as follows. First, to consider consumer sovereignty in healthcare markets in the U.S. Second, to look at parallels between the healthcare markets and electric power markets. Third, to show how one particular healthcare market called the Advantage Medicare system works best in the U.S. And fourth, to show how an electric power CEO bonus system can create better social maximizing outcomes for electric power markets than the so-called competitive generation systems and consumer sovereignty systems the world is trying to use now. Page 2, the U.S. healthcare market. So, the first thing we have to look at is the U.S. free market healthcare system and how it works. For example, the U.S. allows all of its citizens to buy health care insurance and/or health care services on free markets. Thus, the U.S. claims to empower consumer sovereignty in order to maximize its health care social welfare. Indeed, according to such authors as Christopher J. Conover, the biggest problem with U.S. healthcare markets is that they are not free enough in that they have too much regulation and oversight in order to work properly. And if they were simply deregulated more, then the U.S. healthcare market would work rather well. In fact, most U.S. citizens obtain their health care from their employer's health care insurance plan, such that most Americans do not actively shop for health care insurance, although many insurance plans entice the consumer to shop for specific health care services. And yet, European-style government-run health care systems offer much better health care outcomes than the U.S. consumer sovereignty-based system and at much lower health care costs than the U.S. For example, the OECD, which is the set of most economically developed countries of the world, averages 9% of each country's GDP for health care, but where the U.S. averages 17% of its GDP on healthcare, according to the Peterson Foundation. Also, the average OECD healthcare spending per citizen is $5,500 US, but for the U.S. it is $11,000. And yet, according to many indexes, the U.S. has worse healthcare outcomes, such as having one of the lowest life expectancies of any of the OECD countries. So one has to wonder why the U.S. so vehemently continues to use consumer sovereignty in healthcare when it costs more and gives less. Part of the reason for the U.S. system not changing is due to the many entrenched politically powerful interests that keep the U.S. system the way it is. But nevertheless, the U.S. does show one system, essentially a government-run system, that does work better than normal free market fee-for-service system. That system is the U.S. Advantage Medicare system, where a single health care entity takes care of a group of elderly retirees with optimal incentives behind it. What the U.S. Advantage Medicare system does is to pay for keeping a group of retirees within a geographical area healthy. It is essentially a bonus system for healthcare outcomes. Page 3, Consumer Sovereignty. According to 18th century economist Richard Cantillon, in his Essays on the Nature of Commerce, consumer sovereignty was seen as a way to entice greater economic production. Cliff Leslie, in his 1861 volume, The Love of Money, suggests that consumer sovereignty was a way to regulate demand, which William Jevons emphasized in his 1871 treaty, Theory of Political Economy. Friedrich Hayek further emphasized the impersonal discipline of the market as one of the most powerful forces there are for maximizing social welfare as part of the Austrian School of Economics. However, John Kenneth Galbraith suggested in his work, Countervailing Power, that consumer sovereignty was replaced by large concerns' control over the market, and therefore that consumer sovereignty was not particularly powerful. And indeed, the U.S. healthcare market shows a consummate lack of consumer sovereignty power compared to the European-style government-run healthcare systems. But why is that? To understand the power of consumer sovereignty, one has to understand the time and energy it takes for market participants to understand the market, especially with buying things like healthcare, where it is difficult to understand all the options, all the risks, and all the potential providers. In healthcare, even though the value of health is high, it takes time and money to identify a health problem, and then more time and money to figure out different options for that problem, and then even more time and money to find the highest quality provider at the lowest possible price. That means the costs and benefits of consumer sovereignty in terms of the time and energy it takes for consumers to understand the market have to be analyzed more carefully. However, with the U.S. Advantage Medicare system, it is an individual healthcare entity that does all the work of identifying problems, giving the best options, and deciding where to get the best help, similar to that of government-run healthcare systems, but with incentives to keep patients healthy. What this means is that we should look more carefully at a U.S. Advantage Medicare type of system to see if it could indeed work for other markets such as the electric power energy markets. Consider an example. At first glance, free market electric power purchasing looks to be very similar to free market healthcare systems, in that consumers can make all the decisions about which generator to buy their power from, or if they want to produce their own electric power, about how that can be done. Therefore, in both a healthcare system and a free market electric power utility, the consumer has to spend inordinate amounts of time just to figure out what he or she needs, what the best options are, who to get everything from. Say you want to know your kilowatt hour costs are. You would have to spend time looking at it and how it changes. Then you have to spend time figuring out systems to lower your costs. You have to determine appliance costs and energy savings values. Or you are, if you are wanting to put in your own solar power or wind power system, you have to determine its value and then do an investment analysis for yourself. But the U.S. Advantage Medicare system shows a better way. Don't depend on consumer sovereignty to create electric power value. Depend on a centralized power utility CEO to do all of that for you. But how would that work? Page 4, incentivized bonuses. In the journal The Economist, in its special report on executive pay, January 20, 2007, it said, and I quote, "Whereas executives in publicly traded companies earned about $3 per extra $1,000 in profits, managers in the buyout firms earned about $64 per extra $1,000, according to Stephen Kaplan of the University of Chicago," unquote. And, quote, "the lion's share of executive bonanza was deserved in the sense that shareholders got value for the money they handed over," unquote. In other words, what corporations do now is to give an incentive-based pay to their executives in order to incentivize the creation of higher profits for the company. This might lead you to believe that a privately run electric utility would cause its CEO to raise customer prices due to its monopoly status if it were to give a CEO bonus to its chief executive officer. However, the Medicare Advantage healthcare system shows a different way to make a bonus work. The CEO bonus is based on lower customer costs and higher customer value. That is, you pay a bonus to the CEO of an electric utility not to raise prices, but to lower them, and with other differences. The CEO of a utility would receive only a bonus for lowering prices for customers and extending services to more people. Crucially, the CEO would receive a bonus for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. In other words, to help with reducing global warming emissions. For example, all CO2 emissions at the beginning of the electric utility CEO's tenure would be measured to get an initial tons of CO2 emissions per year. Then, if the emissions decrease, the executive receives a bonus based on how many tons per year the decrease is. It would be a percentage of, say, $50 or $100 per ton of CO2 emissions decreased per year. So instead of using consumer sovereignty to create social welfare for electric utilities, we use a CEO incentive plan to create social welfare value instead. One way to find the best incentive program is to run experimental economics trials for various incentive mechanisms. The U.S. Department of Energy could give grants to run such experimental economics trials. Data from previous electric utility real-world technological changes could be used in the experiments. Interestingly, one such CE bonus option was presented at the 4th IAEE Eurasian Conference, Energy Resources of the Caspian and Central Asia, Regional and Global Outlook, in Nur-Sultan, formerly Astana, Kazakhstan, October 17 through the 19th, 2019. That presentation, given by Reynolds and Zhao, was called An Alternative Utility Structure, Incentivized Management and the Principal Agent Problem. It shows one way in which to incentivize a CEO and why the incentive structure could work. Page 5. Conclusions. In conclusion, then, consumer sovereignty is often considered one of the most powerful forces in all of economics, such as authors as Hayek and the Austrian school, but where authors like Galbraith minimize its forcefulness. However, in free markets such as healthcare, consumer sovereignty has been shown in the U.S. to induce higher than average costs with lower than average results. Crucially, though, the U.S. Medicare Advantage program shows lower costs and better results, and where it is based on an incentivized system to the controlling entity. Indeed, all of the top world corporations use CEO bonuses to create shareholder value, so why not employ such a scheme with electric utilities? Such a CEO bonus scheme would reward the utility CEO not for raising prices, but for lowering them. And crucially, there would be a bonus for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Clearly, the green movement wants more clean power, but they don't necessarily want transparency for how much it costs to get the green power. A bonus system would have to accurately evaluate the costs and benefits of reducing greenhouse gases, maybe in the $50 to $100 per ton range, which for many environmentalists might actually be too low for a value for carbon reductions. This is why a utility CEO bonus scheme would not be very popular, even though it would be social value maximizing. This concludes this presentation. Thank you. This has been Dr. Douglas B. Reynolds, Professor of Petroleum and Energy Economics at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, giving the podcast Energy and Healthcare Parallels, Maximizing Utility Social Welfare, based on the paper An Alternative Utility Structure, Incentivized Management and the Principal Agent Problem by Reynolds and Zhao, presented at the 4th IAEE Eurasian Conference, Energy Resources of the Caspian and Central Asia, Regional and Global Outlook, in Nur-Sultan, formerly Astana, Kazakhstan, October 17th through the 19th, 2019. Thank you for listening.